Welcome to a brand new edition of Problematic Women. I'm Virginia Allen.
And I'm Kristen Eichhammer.
And back in studio with us today is our good friend, Crystal Bonham. Crystal, thanks for being here.
Howdy, happy to be here.
Okay, so the Oscars, I think I've said this on the show before, I'm not a big awards show person, but the Oscars were on Sunday night. And the funnest part for me is the dresses. The morning after award shows, I always wake up and I just look at the best dressed articles and go through and look at all the dresses and think, would I wear that? How would that look on me? And why on earth did that person wear that? So who do you all think was the best dressed at the Oscars Sunday night?
Oh, I think Ryan Gosling was the best dressed.
Okay.
I'm not even going to the dresses.
Here we go, down the Barbie hole.
For those who missed it, he wore a bright pink suit with rhinestones. Although that was not what he wore on the red carpet. That was what he wore for like his performance at the Oscars.
I mean, I count that. I'm going to count it.
This is a lot of outfit changes.
Marilyn Monroe. I think dress-wise, though, Emma Stone. Just classic. Looked
very
beautiful.
Classic. Another Emily Blunt.
Oh, yeah.
Another E name. She crushed it. Mm-hmm. I really, really liked her dress. It was very fascinating.
I kind of thought Margot Robbie was a bit understated, which I appreciated because I feel like she can tend to go over the top a lot of the times.
Yeah.
And the black shimmery sequins. Yeah. I didn't love the ruche around her hips personally, but other than that, I was like kind of understated. I kind of liked it.
Kristen and I were talking about this yesterday, and we were saying that it's interesting that she, like, hard pivoted from pink. She was like, okay, I'm done with the pink and the Barbie, and let's move on a little bit.
Vogue said she's dressed for a Barbie funeral because she doesn't want to be, you know, Barbie forever. She wants to go on and do more of probably, I'm assuming, I don't speak for her, but assuming she wants to live past Barbie in her career. So, and she really has done a ton, too, like Wolf of Wall Street. She's been in superhero movies. I mean, she's done a little bit of everything. She's becoming an icon if she isn't already.
I did love, so in the New York Times rundown of all of their outfits, so Vanessa Hutchins, which I feel like I've been saying Hutchinson my whole life, and I was reading her name and was like, it's Hutchins.
I've been getting it wrong this whole time.
My whole life.
But she's pregnant, and the New York Times put, like, they gave little captions for everybody under the best dress, and they put most dressing for two.
That's adorable.
It's adorable, and I love, There is two people there. Thank you, New York Times. You're acknowledging.
Good for you, New York Times. And she slayed. She looks so good.
She looked great. Is a
gorgeous pro-life endorsement.
Gown. Exactly. No, really. Yeah. Really, though.
What did y'all think about the floating straps stuff?
With Emily Blunt?
Oh, yeah. Is that going to be a thing?
I don't know. Not. I don't like it.
Me neither.
Like, then why do you have straps?
The only reason I thought it was kind of cool and, like, for me, why I might try it in the future is, like, my shoulders are so big from CrossFit. Like, it might help make them look narrower.
Interesting.
Know.
Yeah.
You know?
I wonder what it does, dude. Do you think, does it make your shoulders look narrow?
I mean, I don't know. She's built straps, too. Don't. She looks good in everything, though. So.
Yeah.
And if the straps are designed to, like, hold the dress up, you have to think that the bodice of that dress is probably pretty tight.
The body con.
I don't know.
No, that's actually true.
Very fitted.
Very, very fitted. I know that you did not like Zendaya's dress, Kristen.
Oh, yeah.
I kind of liked it.
I know. I don't know why. Just kidding. No, I just didn't like it because she's just such a statement herself. She's so beautiful.
Yeah.
And, I mean, maybe it's just because I saw Dune this weekend and she was wearing no patterns, but the pattern just threw me off. I was like, girl, what are we doing?
Because it was black and it almost looked like it had futuristic pink palm trees on it.
Yeah. Maybe it was like,
you know,
a reference to Dune. Yeah.
Maybe it was.
But she looks good in everything. She was beautiful, regardless.
Oh, yeah.
All of them were.
Gosh, stunning. What would you wear if you were going to an awards show?
I just like, so the first
would
thing,
you go classic or crazy?
I think I would go more the Margot Robbie route just because I just remember prom. Mm-hmm. Strapless is key because you can still move your hands and whatever. And having more of a bigger skirt, at least a mermaid looking skirt that's not super tight. Mm-hmm. My soccer thighs can't handle a skin tight dress. Yeah. Need some room for activities, if you will. Like,
those
just
of us
move
with
it.
Athletic builds, dresses can be challenging.
The tightness, I guess, around the waist area. But, like, everything else, it needs to be comfy. I would prefer to go in sweatpants, honestly.
Wow. I would prefer not to go.
Fair. I will stay home. Yeah. I think I would go classic. But if this was my life and I was regularly going to them, I think I would get bored. And eventually I'd be like, you know what? We're going to try floating straps.
Let's go. Let's try something weird.
Jamie Lee Curtis literally left. Or was it Jamie Lee Curtis? No. I think I'm confusing the Freaky Friday actor or actress. The mom.
Lindsay Lowe. Oh, the mom.
The mom.
Is that Jamie Lee Curtis?
Yeah.
She left early. And I'm just like, yes.
Queen. That's great.
I have bedtime.
That's my vibe.
I'm done. But all right. Well, if you have thoughts on what you would wear or who was the best dressed at the Oscars, let us know. Send us a DM on Instagram. Would love to hear your thoughts. But Kristen, let us know what we have queued up.
Up on today's Problematic Women, the list of lives lost because of illegal immigration is tragically growing longer. We provide an update on one tragic story today. Plus, rumors about Kate Middleton's whereabouts are flying like crazy. What are people saying? And what are we hearing from Buckingham Palace? We discuss. And TikTok might be on its way out of the U.S. We explain why with our friend and Heritage Foundation expert, Kara Frederick, in a moment. And as always, we'll be crowning our Problematic Women of the Week.
Each week on Problematic Women, we sort through the news to find those stories that are of particular interest to conservative-leaning or problematic women, those whose views and opinions are often excluded by those on the so-called feminist left.
If you are a problematic woman or just someone who supports strong, independent women, please consider supporting us by leaving a review or rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and encouraging others to subscribe. It really does make a difference.
All right, let's get to it. We're starting the show on a little bit of a hard note today. It's been 1 year as of yesterday, as of Wednesday, of a beautiful family down in Texas, the Tambunga family, losing two members of their family in a really tragic car accident with a human smuggler, a smuggler that was bringing illegal aliens into the country. You all might remember us talking about on this show, Alisa Tambunga. She lost both her daughter, her 7-year-old daughter, and her mother in a car crash on March 13th, 2023. And not only was Wednesday that 1 year anniversary of that tragic car accident, but it's also the first day of the trial. So the human smuggler who was driving that vehicle is an American citizen. He was driving illegal aliens, and he actually survived that crash. And his trial in court began on Wednesday. He's facing murder charges. And so what a wild and emotional day. I was texting a little bit both on Wednesday morning with Alisa and also with Alisa's sister, Virginia, who of course also lost her mom that day, and her niece. And I'll just read what Alisa sent me in her text. But she said, "Today marks a year, but the pain grows every day. I have vivid flashbacks of how cold they were, how helpless I felt. It plays back for me in slow motion. That's why my family and I fight so hard. That is why we haven't let up. We live in a constant state of pain and grief. We all know that our mom and Amelia were selfless, caring, and loving. And now we try to carry that on by seeking justice and doing our part to ensure this never happens to another family." And that really has been their story. Alisa testified before Congress. She actually met with Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas to tell him personally the story of what happened, the really tragic details of that car crash. And she has been repeatedly calling for security on our southern border because, as she says, her daughter and her mom would both be alive today if we had a secure border.
We recently came out with a video, I think, at Heritage that literally walked through some of these instances, like the Lake and Riley instance. Mm-hmm. Crystal did it, actually. Yeah. She did a great job. And just walking through every barrier that basically the Biden administration took away that mm-hmm. enabled some of these, you know, tragic deaths to occur. And that's, at the end of the day, I get frustrated when I see these stories because they're all so preventable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And those are real people. Any death is tragic. But the fact that this has almost been a government-empowered death, it makes it even more tragic.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's hard to see past the trauma of it all and how jarring it is that, you know, an innocent young 22-year-old nursing student could go on a run in the middle of the day and not return, right? So it can be challenging to tie that directly to policy, mm-hmm. right? But in this case, it's pretty evident. You know, Biden has reversed at least 94 executive orders that Trump had put into place that helped to secure the border. And we've just seen the deadly ramifications of that. You know, we've had at least 10 million people enter the country illegally. Who knows the actual number of gotaways that aren't included in that number? And the bottom line is this is 100% preventable, mm-hmm. right? And we don't need an act of Congress to secure the border. Biden could do it right now with a phone and a pen, shut it down, put an end to the needless deaths and human trafficking and a whole host of other things that come from really this tragedy at the southern border.
Well, and it was fascinating because 3-4 weeks ago, the White House, there was rumors floating around that Biden was going to take executive action on the border. And since then, he came out and said this week, no, that's Congress's job. I'm not going to do anything. Congress needs to act. And it is so frustrating because you realize he could stop this. He could prevent it. Not only could lives like Amelia and Maria Tambunga have been saved and protected, they could be alive right now. There's so many other examples like we've just seen of lives that should be here. There's no reason why they shouldn't be here. But because of our open borders and the policies of the Biden administration, individuals were allowed into the country that ultimately resulted in the death of American citizens.
I just feel like someone, not to make this too happy, but where's Kourtney Kardashian yelling, people are dying?
Yeah.
You know, like that's literally what it is. People are dying. Virginia created this really good list for me to run through real quick.
Well, and I can't take total credit. This was sent by someone else at Heritage, and I was like, oh, man, this is a stellar list. We need to flesh this
out. But yeah, to your point, we've got Laken Riley, who was literally bludgeoned to death during a run. Disgusting, terrible, absolutely preventable. She was on a college campus, is no place safe. And then we've got 12-year-old Travis Wolf, who passed after a car crash with an illegal immigrant. There's a lot of car crashes that...
Again, high-speed chases, usually with police.
Yeah. We've created an environment. This illegal alien was driving the wrong way down the road in Missouri. So Midwest, you know, that's not anywhere close.
Yeah.
And he was going over 70 miles per hour.
The wrong way.
The wrong way.
Actually, this one might have been a she driving the car. I'm going to fact check that. I'm going to fact check myself on that.
I kind of refer to everything as he, so sorry, guys. And then we've got a 2-year-old, Jeremy, can't say his last name, but he was shot and killed by an illegal immigrant in Maryland. That's like literally 10 miles north of us right
now. This entire list that we have to go through right now, none of these states our southern border states.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this little boy, he was on a walk with his mom when they were caught up in a crossfire of an illegal alien that was in a car with other people and was firing at just another group. Is that fun? Like, what were they doing? What was the gang violence that created this? And in October, 46-year-old Francisco Javier Cuellar was found dead in his home in Florida. I mean, none of those were Texas, Arizona, New Mexico, California. Mm-hmm. Those are all everyday Americans, and basically the Biden administration has said, this isn't my problem. I don't have to do this. Excuse me, sir. This goes well beyond the state and the border. Yeah. What are we doing to prevent more of these deaths?
It's a looking the other direction. And Kristen, what you said a minute ago made me think also about the number of fentanyl deaths you know, in saying, where's Kourtney Kardashian and speaking out? That's an issue that should not be controversial in anyway, and there needs to be a real celebrity presence speaking out about the dangers of fentanyl. And even if they're not comfortable getting involved in saying Biden needs to secure the border, well, at the very least, you need to be talking about the fentanyl crisis and the number of lives that have been lost to fentanyl and raising awareness that we need secure borders in order to stop the flow and bringing awareness for young kids who are taking these pills and not knowing what they are. But on every front, we've just seen this tragic loss of life, whether it is on the roads in car accidents, taking fentanyl pills, random violence, gunfire. And you kind of have to ask yourself, when are our leaders going to say enough is enough and actually take action?
I was literally just thinking that. When is enough enough? Crystal, I mean, you're our in-house Texas expert queen.
Yeah. Resident border state.
Really?
Lady. I don't know.
That's her title.
Don't quote me on that.
No, that's on her office plaque, actually.
Yeah.
What are, like, are you hearing anything from, you know, our Lone Star State? What's going on in your head?
Yeah, I mean, you saw a couple weeks ago Biden and Trump do their kind of face-off down at the border. Mm-hmm. You saw Biden go to an area that has been well secured by not just the border wall that Trump built, but also some of the actions of Governor Greg Abbott, who has, you know, really stepped into the gap and done a great job in working in the capacity that he can to secure the southern border. We've seen a lot of legal things coming from that, and luckily those have been upheld up to this point in both the courts in Texas and here in D.C. And so, you know, Texans have been on this, on the front lines of this, for same with Arizona, New Mexico, California to some extent. And at the end of the day, like the folks that I know in the Texas state legislature and my friends and family that still live down there, they are all really upset, really angry. You know, Abbott has stepped in the gap. He's doing what he can, but they just feel abandoned by D.C. lawmakers, by the Biden administration. And really, at the end of the day, the admin here has blood on their hands and they're not doing anything about it. So I think that there's going to be a massive reckoning this fall around this issue, because to your point, Kristen, reading this list, none of these deaths that were 100% preventable are border states. And border states like Texas, like California, have been dealing with this forever. And it's only increased in the last few years under Biden, and they see it and they live it every day. So I think that that reckoning is coming.
Yeah. We'll see. Little plug, Project 2025 here, they've got the plans in
place. They have solutions.
And I'm sure literally anyone that ran for president on the right side of the aisle had their own infrastructure that they were creating, because this is such an easy solution. Just shut it down. I like am quoting Tom Homan from Heritage Foundation. He's like, shut it down. Just shut it down.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just make it stop. I mean, to the point that I said earlier, right? Like at least 94 executive actions that Biden has overturned and undermined. And it's directly correlating to what we're seeing at the border over the last few years. And
direct line.
All he needs to do is reinstate some of those policies, but that would also be them admitting that, A, they were wrong, mm-hmm. and Trump was right. Mm-hmm. And will we ever see that?
No.
Remains to be seen. But in the meantime, Americans have to suffer, and it's not cool. It's not fair.
It's not fair at all. Well, this is obviously an issue that we're super passionate about here, so we're going to keep following it. And it's one that Americans are passionate about. You look at the polling and you see that, you know, it moves back and forth between immigration issues, border issues being the number one issue on the minds of Americans, and the economy. And those right now, it's just like, you know, one week it's polling shows one and then the next week, and it's just back and forth. So we will keep on following this very closely. And stay with us. Up next, we're going to go a little bit lighter and talk about our favorite princess, Kate Middleton. But in the meantime, the Network of Enlightened Women sees the challenges that conservative women are up against on their college campuses. From liberal professors to finding friends on campus, it can be a really lonely place to be a conservative woman. And that is what inspired News President Karen Lipps to write her book, You're Not Alone, The Conservative Woman's Guide to College. Readers will get to know more than 20 college students and alums, share their stories, and offer advice on how do you do college well as a conservative woman. With these stories, Lipps identifies problems on campus and provides practical tips for how conservative young women can thrive in the environment of a liberal college campus. This college guide covers the many struggles and real-life situations that college women will face, whether you're a freshman or a senior. And empowering these women, empowering you, will help you or the women in your life who are on college campuses become even more effective advocates for the conservative ideas that you hold dear. You're Not Alone, The Conservative Woman's Guide to College is available now. You can purchase it on Amazon. You can buy a copy for yourself, your friends, your sisters. And you can learn more about the Network of Enlightened Women by visiting their website. It's enlightenedwomen.org. Again, that's enlightenedwomen.org. All right, Kristen, take it away with Kate Middleton.
Oh, man. Yeah, no, it just feels like the world is playing a big game of Where's Waldo? But in this case, where's Kate?
That's accurate.
And for those of you who maybe weren't, you know, paying too much attention, frankly, I wasn't until some of my friends started texting me like, have you seen the Kate Middleton stuff? And I'm like, no. But for those of you not keeping up, the princess's last public appearance was December 25th. That is Christmas. So last year, technically, nearly 3 months ago. The palace prepared us for this long absence, though, vaguely saying that she would be recovering from a procedure, an abdominal procedure, until after Easter. So the UK rumor mill is a turning right now. There's lots of concerns. And so I kind of, you know, I wanted to dig a little deeper into this and walk you guys through a timeline. The Time magazine actually was where I went for this. They have a really good breakdown. January 17th, Kensington Palace announces that Kate underwent a planned abdominal surgery. So that would be making public engagements unlikely for the next few months. And in their words, they said until after Easter, again, very vague. That same day, though, King Charles, actually, his office also announced he was undergoing a treatment related to his prostate cancer diagnosis. So interesting that those happened on the same timeline. January 18th, Prince William visits Kate in the hospital. So cool, we see him, you know, going to the hospital. And then January 29th, Kensington Palace shares that Kate is making good progress in her recovery and that she will return to Windsor Castle, which is what we see on March 4th when Kate was photographed in a car alongside her mom headed towards Windsor Castle. But this is where we start to get a little sticky. March 5th, the British Army posted that the Princess of Wales would be attending the annual Trooping the Colour event on June 8th and then quickly removed it. So a little sketchy, but that happened on March 5th, just the day after we saw her. Why is that? No idea. March 10th, Mother's Day in the UK, for those of you unaware, Kensington Palace shared a photo of Kate with her kids. However, that photo was pulled by AP, Reuters, and a few other organizations due to the image appearing to be manipulated. AP kind of actually came out with a statement saying that their standards require photos to be accurate, and this photo did not meet that standard. If you look at the image, it's Kate surrounded by her three kids, and the, you know, the ground kind of has some curves to it. It does, like the tiles are funky looking. Her daughter's hair looks a little cut off close to where Kate's face is, and then her daughter's hand also looks a little cut off, and those are indicators of some manipulation. Later, you know, so that's March 10th, actually, I think it was that evening, but it might have been March 11th when Kate actually issued her formal apology, which doesn't happen very often from the royal family. So kind of a major thing, where she said, like many amateur photographers, I do occasionally experiment with editing. However, people are looking at the photo of her face specifically, and there are a ton of theories. Some are like, this is her Vogue cover photo. They just, you know, edited and put it on top of that. And they're also pulling, this is a photo that's been taken before. They just, you know, obviously manipulated it. Within hours, though, there was a photo of the princess leaving Windsor with Prince William. And I don't know if you guys have seen this, but the bricks in the window and the bricks above the car. So if you look into the car with through this photo, you'll see the prince and princess. And then the bricks on the other side of the window that she's actually looking out of, because she's not looking at the camera, they're totally different. They're like red and blue, while the brick above the car is more like worn down, super red. It's just really funky.
You're really leaning into these
conspiracy theories.
Yes.
Yeah, I feel like I'm on a serial killer podcast right now. Not that I'm saying that's what's happening, but there are a lot of theories. I actually was talking to the friends who brought this to light, for me at least, and one of them thinks that maybe she had an emergency hysterectomy and there were complications. People are saying maybe she's in a coma, like in the recovery process for this abdominal procedure. And then a fun one that's not as tragic is maybe she's a contestant on The Blind Singer and they don't want to spoil it. I don't know. There have been divorce rumors, pretty much everything. But at the end of the day, I think, you know, what we're hearing a lot is the royal family is very private. They're going to give information when they feel like it. And that's kind of the situation we're in. Do you guys, what are your thoughts?
I think the royal family is having a pretty rough go of it right now.
I'll say.
Across the board. I mean, in addition to this, right, you have all the drama with Prince Harry,
yes,
and his visa and like preferential treatment maybe by our Department of Homeland Security.
Yeah.
So you've got that going on. You've got this going on. You've got the Meghan Markle situation, Prince Harry's book, all of it. So I think just, yeah, I mean, I respect their desire for privacy, but also what PR professional in their right mind even let this photo get out
really
in public, right? So
yeah,
it's like, even if it's true that she's some kind of like Photoshop wannabe, whatever, how did it make it past their comp shop?
Yeah.
Right? And then, I don't know, I was like doing a little bit of digging. And when the palace, they basically can put out what they call a kill order. And that's what they did to pull this picture down.
Wow.
And I think it might be the first time it's ever been used for a photo.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
So that's kind of interesting and a big deal. And it just kind of shows there's so much secrecy. And I mean, if anyone has watched The Crown.
I know. That made me a royal expert.
Right. Which is obviously true.
Obviously.
Who knows? But they have so much control over the narrative around the royal family that I'm like, Is someone in their comp shop acting nefariously and they wanted it to slip? Is something going on?
Oh, that's
kind of where my brain is going, because otherwise it should have never seen the light of day in the first place.
Yeah. Well, I do have a really hard time believing that Kate is like laying in bed at 11 o'clock, you know,
playing with Photoshop.
Yeah, that looks kind of cool. Maybe I'll change the color. No, I think every single photo that's issued out, Crystal, like you said, not only does it go through a comp shop, but I'm like, I think probably Kate is just eyes of approval. She's not touching the photo at all. Like, why would she be?
I wouldn't want to if I was her.
I know. And I think as a royal, you would know better to not edit stuff. That seems very common sense.
The craziest theory I heard real quick is that because the king is not doing well in his health wise, they're trying to protect the image of Prince William. And there's been speculation, I guess there was a document or a statement or something, that only Prince William signed, not Kate.
Yes.
And that's what's led to this coma idea. Like, maybe she just can't physically sign, in which case this guy's got to have a solution for that. Like, maybe a family stamp or something so they don't both have to sign. But there's also been this idea that there's going to be a shakeup. Like, maybe Harry's trying to make a play because he wants to come back to the royal family in the fold. There's a ton of crazy wonkiness out there. And if you've seen The Crown, I'm not going to be surprised if anything crazy like that happens.
The political dynamics. Here we go.
Crazy. Well, Americans' obsession, I am right there in it with Kate Middleton. There's just something fascinating about the royal family since we don't have royals in America. So I really do respect the privacy that they want to have. And at the same time, it is fun to think about what's actually going on here. And please tell us. All right. Well, we are going to hit TikTok here in a second with our good friend, Kara Frederick. Crystal, we are going to let you go. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks,
always
y'all.
A pleasure
good to
and
see
a joy.
You.
All right. Up next, Kara Frederick. Are you looking for an easy and entertaining way to keep up with the news you care about? The Daily Signal and Heritage Foundation YouTube channels offer interviews with policy experts on the most critical issues and debates America is facing today, as well as short explainer videos that break down complex issues and documentaries that dive deep into the ways policy actually impacts people. Go ahead and subscribe to both the Daily Signal and Heritage Foundation YouTube channels today. You can search for either on your YouTube app or visit youtube.com/Heritage Foundation and youtube.com/Daily Signal. Well, we have joining us today, Kara Frederick, the director of the Tech Policy Center at the Heritage Foundation. Kara, thanks so much for being here with us.
Anytime. Love the show. Thanks for having me.
Well, for those who spend a lot of time watching Fox News, they've probably seen you at least once, if not a dozen times on Fox, bringing amazing insights, not only on the tech space and things like TikTok, which we're going to talk about in a second, but on multiple issues that are of interest to conservatives. So we were so blessed to have you at Heritage. And Kara, this is fun to get to have you on the show to talk about TikTok and what on earth is going on. Last night, I was thinking the song, Kesha's song, TikTok, popped into my head. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is such a sign of being a millennial, that when you say TikTok, think about the Kesha song instead of just the social media app, which that song came out 14 years ago.
Seven
years before TikTok, the social media app, came out.
Ahead of her time.
Ahead of her time. Kesha knew.
Yeah, stop it. Now I feel really old. So
yeah, really though.
I'm never coming back.
Well, Kara, so we have this major bill that the House has actually just passed. They passed on Wednesday that people are referring to as the TikTok bill. If you would, explain what exactly is in this bill, what's at stake, and why there's so many concerns around national security related to TikTok that it's led to now the House of Representatives passing a bill that's kind of giving TikTok this choice, almost like an ultimatum of either you need to cut your ties with China or you have to leave the U.S. What is the situation here?
Yeah, so the House just passed this bill. It was great, overwhelmingly bipartisan, 352-6. They suspended the rules in order to do it quickly because it passed overwhelmingly, unanimously out of the House Energy and Commerce Committee a week before, 50-0. And they thought, okay, we've got a lot of momentum here. Let's do it. And yeah, so passed in the House, on to the Senate now. We really hope that Schumer will bring it to the floor for a vote, especially our Heritage Action for America. They've been great on these efforts too. And we, on the research side, really believe that this is, you know, great policies. And a lot of the policy recommendations that we've been propagating on the Hill across the street from the Heritage Foundation to members, to senators, are captured within the bill. And the state of play, if you look just at the bill, you nailed it, Virginia. It's called the Protecting Americans from Foreign Adversary Controlled Applications Act. And that is it. It's everything that it says that it does in the title. And it offers a very simple choice. We've seen reading the text of the bill over and over again, really helping with some of the first drafts and really integrate those policy recommendations from the Tech Policy Center. What it basically does is say that you, ByteDance, must divest from the Chinese must divest TikTok and sever your ties with the Chinese Communist Party, as TikTok potentially sell to an American company, you know, something, or face a prohibition on app stores like the Google Play Store, Apple's App Store, or web hosting services. So that effectively means that ByteDance has a choice. You sever ties, or if you're looking at your TikTok business, sever ties with the CCP or face a prohibition. And I think it's worth noting that there's a lot of wailing and gnashing of teeth, so to speak, about a TikTok ban, when that's not the case at all. It just says, TikTok, pick a flag. You know, are you going to shore up these national security issues and be, frankly, more of an American company than a CCP-controlled company? Or are you going to continue to operate as you do? And then you're going to face some penalties if you do that. And, you know, the United States government, it exists to protect Americans for national security, legitimate national security reasons, from our foreign enemies, our real adversaries, like the Chinese Communist Party. And this bill does that. It is very, very simple. I know there's been a lot of arguments swirling around it, but we have the data on our side. We have the research on our side. We have the analysis on our side that says ByteDance, the parent company of TikTok, headquartered in China, is a national security risk because it must obey the People's Republic of China's laws and policies. Foremost among them are the National Intelligence Law of 2017 that effectively mean a private company is no longer a private company and has to engage in, quote, state intelligence work. That means any ostensible private company in China must work in the service of the Chinese party state. That's just one data point. A second one that I think a lot of people don't understand about TikTok and its ByteDance ownership is that the Chinese Communist Party actually has a board seat on a ByteDance domestic subsidiary. So there's a card-carrying member of the Chinese Communist Party sitting on the ByteDance board. That's insane. And additionally, a third data point here, and then I promise I'll stop. Yeah, it's a problem. The fact that Department of Justice reported that there is an internal Chinese Communist Party in ByteDance that influences the activities of that company. So you've got card-carrying member of the CCP sitting on the board. You've got an internal CCP committee that's steering this company in a specific direction. And the mere fact that its parent company is headquartered in Beijing. This is our enemy. What, China would never, ever let us do that in China. Why are we letting China do this to America? It is truly as simple as that.
Yeah, and I thank you so much for breaking that down. And when you say, you know, the data that they're collecting, I think a lot of people, you know, they will say, yeah, China has my data or Google has my data, but what are they going to use this TikTok data for? And why is it so dangerous? Why should we be, you know, ensuring that every American and our listeners especially understand the risk of sharing their data with an organization and, you know, a party such as this?
Yeah, so I'll say two things. And first and foremost, you know, no one is a more ardent critic of American social media companies and how they hoover up and exploit our data. I do believe there are separate data privacy laws that are necessary to protect the American consumer. For instance, a national data protection framework that says there are restrictions on how these private tech companies in America, incorporated in America, can collect, store, and share your data. That is a separate issue. When you you look at the comparison of the data collection capabilities of these tech platforms, TikTok is far and away the worst. We even have an Australian cybersecurity company called Malcore that did an evaluation of these apps, and its determination was basically like, there is no reason that TikTok should exist other than to collect data based off of the type of data and the amount of data and the vulnerabilities in its data collection. So this application is exactly what the Chinese party is using it for, and will potentially use it for even more in greater ways as a surveillance app. And I'll point to one piece of evidence there too. ByteDance, they had an internal project called Project Raven that was using TikTok as the surveillance platform that it is to find the physical locations, to attempt to find the physical locations of American journalists, because they suspected there were whistleblowers and leakers within the company. So they wanted to try to co-locate. And these are physical locations, which means there's a physical security issue there, to co-locate these American journalists and these ByteDance employees to try to ferret out these leakers. So they admitted it. They said, yep, this happened. We fired those guys and whatnot. But to me, that's, it proves everything that we're saying. These concerns are no longer hypothetical. TikTok was actually used as a weapon and a surveillance instrument to target Americans. And one more thing on this, and there, the TikTok for a very long time stood up and said, hey, all of American data is stored on servers in Singapore and the US. We don't allow any American data to be accessed in China. Well, they got caught in that lie when they found ByteDance Chinese-based engineers accessed American data. And this is due to the intrepid reporting of a lot of current Forbes reporters now. So credit to those guys for really staying on the case, because they've been able to catch TikTok, frankly, in lie after lie. And we know this through leaked audio recordings and ex-employees talking about how things like the Chinese Communist Party has godlike access, has a supreme access, a god key to American user data. So you believe the whistleblowers, or you believe the TikTok people who are invested in making sure their company keeps grabbing up American user data and they keep making money. That's pretty much it. And we can talk more about potential uses of this information, as you asked initially, but I think I'll stop there and take a breath.
Yeah, please recite. Well, and I think it's interesting to see what TikTok's response has been as they're facing more pressure, and as they have seen so much bipartisan support for that decision to be made of, hey, TikTok, you either need to break with ByteDance, your parent company that has those requirements as being headquartered in Beijing. ByteDance is subject, as you said, to the Chinese law that requires companies to make data available to the Chinese Communist Party. So they've been given this choice, and Their response has been that they've been trying to rally TikTok users to speak out, and they put like a pop-up. I think this was last week. They put a pop-up on TikTok that when users opened the app, it wouldn't let them right away access the application until they entered their zip code, which would then generate who their lawmaker was in Congress and encourage them to call their lawmaker to say, please don't vote to pass this bill that would give TikTok this ultimatum. And that's been really fascinating, just to kind of watch essentially TikTok squirm as they're put on the hot seat and they're exposed.
Yeah. And how gross is that? As one of my friends on Twitter put it, to use American children as human shields for their company's goals. And by their company, I mean the Chinese Communist Party, because of all the reasons why I just explained. And I can go talk more about it. There's a March 2023 paper that the Heritage Foundation put out that puts a lot of this information in writing. But I think it's just a good example of the real-time influence that this CCP propaganda machine has on the next generation of citizens. And, I don't necessarily want to harp on the harms to kids. Obviously, as a new mom, I'm thinking about it all the time. But right now, I think it's best explained as a national security issue very quickly, very clearly. And yes, we've learned along the way the noxious effects and influence it's had on children. You have reporters, I think this is really interesting, reporters signing up as 13 and 14-year-old girls. So they're doing these as experiments on TikTok. TikTok, and they find that within 8 minutes, they're served depression content, suicidal content, eating disorder content, all sorts of disgusting information and poison, really, that you don't want filling the heads of young American girls. And much has been made of the fact that, again, they don't allow American social media apps in China, and they don't even allow this version of TikTok in China. Douyin, which is the sister app to TikTok that takes place in China, it, according to a lot of these other reporters and their experiments, serves much more wholesome content, STEM-related engineering, that kind of thing, not content that is meant to break the brains of young children. And we have so many evidence that that's already happening. Look at the Wall Street Journal investigation of TikTok tics that were reported, and the sort of Tourette's-like issues that sends girls, young girls, to pediatric hospitals. They had one instance in Texas where they said there was a handful of them, you know, before the pandemic, and then it just blew up, skyrocketed, over 60 in some ways, of children being admitted with these tics. And the thing that they had in common is they all followed specific TikTok influencers. So, and again, you've had neuroscientists talking about this as a sociogenic illness that is spread on TikTok. And that is just sort of the effects that it's having on our social fabric. But that those pop-up notifications that you talked about, that demonstrates the influence that they can have on children. Some, according to specific reports, Matt Foldy was great on this, even threatened suicide. They threatened to assassinate members of Congress, according to this reporting, if they took away TikTok. That in and of itself is a big problem, especially when you say, when you look at the facts, the Chinese Communist Party is behind control of this application.
So obviously we've seen that the bill has passed in the House just past Wednesday. We're not too clear about what the Senate's going to do. They've been a little bit non-committal. But if the Senate does pass it, how would TikTok actually be banned in practice? If ByteDance holds on to TikTok and remains controlled by the Chinese Communist Party, then what would that look like on your phone? Would the app just not open? Would it disappear?
Yeah. So what would happen? It would basically wither away, kind of thing. There wouldn't be able to push updates. You wouldn't be able to download new. If say me, who, you know, I'm not dumb, so I haven't downloaded TikTok. No offense, girls, but I wouldn't be able to go to the Google Play Store and download it. I wouldn't be able to go to the apps on penalties of civil penalties of fines for those companies or any web hosting services that also host the platform. So that's an important point too. The only reason why the drafters of the bill included websites in this explanation was because even if you can't access it on your phone or through app stores, you can still go to things like TikTok.com, and ByteDance, aka the CCP, will retain control over it in that regard. So they only included websites to make sure that they couldn't circumvent a ban and that you couldn't access TikTok through TikTok.com. So a lot of, you know, there's been some consternation of, oh, this is broad, this is sweeping. That cannot be further from the truth. This is so narrowly targeted. It probably doesn't even go as far as I want it to go, to be completely honest. So that's what a prohibition would look like. It's not the ban that everybody's saying. You're not going to be carted away if you try to download TikTok. There are absolutely zero enforcement mechanisms against individual users of these platforms. So no American is going to be penalized if they still want to try to get on TikTok. It places the onus on these organizations, these services and whatnot, on the pain of civil penalties for doing so. So it's not a massive hammer, as everyone says. It's a very finely tuned scalpel, and it could definitively deal with this threat, as my friend FCC Commissioner Brendan Carr has said.
Kara, thank you. This is so insightful. I really appreciate you joining us. And for all of our listeners, if you're on TikTok, this is the sign. This is your sign.
Just get off. Delete it. Get a new phone, maybe.
Truly, truly.
Kara Frederick with the Heritage Foundation. Kara, thank you.
Thank you, ladies.
Today, news you can trust feels like a rarity. That's why the Daily Signal podcast releases a top news edition every weekday at 5 p.m. Whether driving home from work, fixing dinner, or picking the kids up from soccer practice, you can stay informed on the headlines you care about. Every show is quick and succinct, designed to keep you up to speed on the issues that actually matter. Catch our top news edition right here in your Daily Signal podcast feed every evening, or listen first thing in the morning before catching the day's interview. And be sure to subscribe on the Daily Signal podcast so you never miss an episode.
Now, it is that time, once again, my favorite time of the week, time to crown our problematic woman of the week. And the crown goes to
Sister Francesca Cabrini.
So this is the lead in a new film called Cabrini. And you might not have heard of it at the Oscars, but it's killer.
Full circle here.
Yeah, full circle. But so in this movie.
Called Cabrini.
You can basically follow the missionary life of Sister Francesca Cabrini, an Italian immigrant who helped thousands of fellow Italian immigrants in the U.S. by establishing schools and orphanages. She started in New York City, and actually kind of interesting in the story, she went to the Pope. She's from Italy, obviously. She goes to the Pope and she's like, I want to go to China and do some missionary work. And he's, don't go east, go west, go to the United States. And when she's there, it's the late 1800s. Obviously, immigration surged in the U.S. during that time. And there was a huge flood of people and not enough infrastructure. And she kind of took it upon herself to start, you know, really loving and caring for specifically children by creating these orphanages and schools where she not only taught them about, you know, Jesus and the faith, but also just basic things to help elevate their knowledge levels and help them go on to be like
to have opportunities in life.
Yeah, opportunities, become meaningful members of society. Throughout her life, she actually made 23 transatlantic crossings, so quite the traveler for back then. And she established 67 institutions, that being schools, hospitals, and orphanages. She was later canonized as a saint by Pope Pius XII for her holiness and service to mankind, and was named the patroness of immigrants, surprisingly. So really coming full circle for this show.
Yeah.
The actress, if you haven't seen it, she's been plugging her. She had a really great ad on International Women's Day.
Oh, yeah.
Where she highlighted the, you know, this
contributions.
Just the contributions and the work of this problematic woman.
Very problematic indeed. And the movie is out right now. It came out on March 8th. So, I mean, what I feel like, especially around Easter, what a perfect movie to go see, especially if you're home with family or anything during Holy Week. And just this beautiful picture of a woman who lived with her life fully laid down before the Lord and who chose to serve people in such a practical way during a hard time. That was a hard time. There was so much opportunity in America, but also it was that time where the infrastructure was being built up and many children, because of disease and sickness, were becoming orphans. And just to see how she stepped in and filled that gap, what a beautiful picture to aspire to of how do I live my life in a way that's hands wide open to the Lord. So go see Cabrini.
Yeah, absolutely. Love it.
And with that, that's going to do it for this week's edition of Problematic Women.
Join us next Thursday morning for a brand new edition. And in the meantime, please subscribe and share.
As conservatives, we need your support in the podcast world. So if you would take a minute, subscribe to the show, and then leave us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, CastBox, Google Play, wherever you like to listen. We're across all platforms. And what that does is it helps to spread the word to more listeners. And also, don't forget to follow us on Instagram.
Yeah. And while you're following us on Instagram, go ahead and delete TikTok.
Yes.
Have a great week, guys.
Have a great week.
Problematic Women is brought to you by more than 500,000 members of the Heritage Foundation.
It is a product of the Daily Signal, produced by Lauren Evans and Virginia Allen. And be sure to follow Problematic Women on Instagram.
We produce Problematic Women in remembrance of our dear friend and former co-host, Bree Payton.